Has the software industry and the computer industry done a good job or a bad job in educating people about computers?
Horrible. Absolutely horrible job.
Welcome to You Are the Guest, a weekly show where you can be the guest and tell people what you and your friends and neighbors think about news events and issues of the day. It's part talk show, part opinion poll, part reality show, and a whole lot of fun. And it's completely dependent upon your participation as a guest. To be considered as a guest for a future show, check out the website at www.youaretheguest.com for details. Now here is your program host, Bill Grady.
Greetings from the great city of Fort Dodge, Iowa, and welcome to show number 34 of You Are the Guest, the show where we talk to everyday people just like you and me about their lives and about the issues of the day. Our guest today is from Bellingham, Washington. Matt, welcome to You Are the Guest.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Matt, what can you tell our listeners about yourself?
Well, I guess if I was to define myself in a single word, it would be technology enthusiast. I think that would be a defining, you know, phrase or set of words to really define who I am as a person.
You don't like the word geek?
Yeah, I was going for the politically correct version of that. I have mixed feelings about the word. I think when it's in geek company, I think it's fine. But I think it depends on how it's being used and how people are wording with it.
What's the most asked question when it comes to the average day person when it comes to computers?
The number one question is, why do people create viruses and why do people create spyware, usually in the same sentence? Just kind of malware and problems. Why do these things keep happening to me, I think would be the collective question on that one. And there's no easy answer for that.
I asked some people last night, I said, I'm going to be talking to Matt, who's an expert in computers. So what type of questions would you like for him to answer? And their number one question is, why do I get pop-ups and how do I get rid of them?
Well, that's one of those loaded types of questions, but there's actually, it's almost a two-part answer. Pop-ups can come from two different places. The first and most likely place you're going to see pop-ups are on websites that are serving them to you, meaning that regardless of how you arrive at that website, these pop-up ads are going to basically make an appearance. And there's not a lot you can do about it short of coming up with a way of blocking them on your end of things. The second way you can end up with pop-ups is with what's called spyware or adware. And that's a malicious application, or in some cases not malicious, depending on your definition of adware, to where it can actually be installed on your computer, and regardless of what web page you surf to, it serves ads depending on the choice of website that you're trying to visit, trying to match that level of interest and basically annoy you. Prevention, the easiest way of doing it is to use the Firefox web browser. In exclusion, just totally exclude using Internet Explorer altogether. That would be my major suggestion. And the second one is to really watch what you're downloading. Do not ever install software or games from sources you are not familiar with. If you've not heard of them, don't use them. And that really about covers that. I mean, that's really the easiest way to describe it. It's such a loaded question because there's so many variables there. But that's kind of the short road answer, I guess you might say.
Are people having more questions about computers, or are they having more questions today about the internet?
I would say more about computers because they don't know enough yet to have questions about the internet. One of the funny things that I've noticed just from working at Locker specifically is that our readers are very technically savvy, but if you approach someone here in my hometown of Bellingham, Washington, and try and tell them about this really great thing called podcasting or viral web video or something to that effect, they're going to look at you with a very blank look on their face because they don't get it. And then they will turn and ask you a question about computers, not realizing that perhaps they are related. I think there's a lot of ignorance going around in that effect, and most people are still struggling with just making the computer end of things work. How do I check my email without having errors? How come I'm not able to get to this particular website? Why am I not able to get my password to work? Little things like that, just on their computer itself, just in their email clients, and trying to understand how to use a word processor. And so I would say that probably they're still struggling with just the basic computer functions, and the internet stuff is going to have to come later for a lot of folks.
Has the software industry and the computer industry done a good job or a bad job in educating people about computers?
Horrible. Absolutely horrible job. There's no question of that. I've only seen a very select few applications that are truly intuitive. Most applications are designed to have as many features as possible and therefore excluding about 80% of the user population. And frankly, I find that to be really frustrating. A good example would be your typical off-the-shelf antivirus software. If you go to buy, insert name here, antivirus program or firewall program, most people are going to install it if they can even get that far with it, and then they're going to get stuck. I think the industry's done a lot of job. It's very confusing for them. There's a lot of options that they have to try and sort through to understand how to make it work. They don't even understand that really the benefit of having it other than this real loose interpretation that somehow it's going to protect them. And really, that's all they're getting from it. So, yeah, really, I think the software industry's really let people down. And I think that ISPs and just the entire collective technology world has excluded in large segments of our population while trying to target young kids and excluding people, anyone over 35, in my opinion.
In my circle of friends, whenever they have a problem with their computer, it's like, oh, give Grady a call. Is that the way most people get their computer problem solved?
There's no question that usually most people are going to get their computer problems resolved through someone they know and trust, a family friend, the technician that everybody's always talking about, whatever that may look like. There's no question of that. That's definitely the case. And I tend to fall into that category a lot more than I would like. So,
did you get started in that way?
Actually, I got started programming BASIC on an old Texas Instruments computer years and years and years ago when I was a little kid. It was a 1978 model, to kind of put that in perspective. And so, you know, back then computers weren't really the hip happening thing, and your parents are looking down at that thinking, oh, that's great. He's going to get beat up when he goes to school. You know, they're thinking, oh, God, this isn't a good thing. It wasn't until much later on that I started getting into the repair sides of stuff and away from the programming. It was kind of interesting because I sort of fell into it. One person found out that I was fixing my own computer and they wanted some help with it. And it kind of took off from there. Very limited advertising and mostly word of mouth. So, yeah.
Have you been following Sony's progress with PlayStation 3?
A little bit. Mainly I've been following what Xbox has been doing just because they have a refined product that is ready to go, is on the market, and you can actually point to it and say, here, this is what it actually does. With Sony, I feel like that they've really dropped the ball in a lot of areas. First of all, they really blew it with this whole rootkit thing. And for those that are not familiar with what that is, basically they allowed for a backdooring type setup to, well, basically it was a real lack of trust on their part, and I'm just going to skip over that completely. But they've made a lot of promises with PlayStation 3, and they are going to say that it's going to be graphically pleasing. They're going to say it's powerful. It's got a lot of great features, and people should be really excited about the games you're going to be able to play. And yet every time an opportunity comes to present it at one of these conventions, these gaming conventions, if you will, they opt out of it. And so they've really done is feed the hype, and there's not really been any substance to really point to. So that's my take on it.
Is the consumer better off to wait for PlayStation 3, or should, in your opinion, just jump in with 360?
To be honest with you, I think it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for just a really fun gaming experience that you can play right now, and there are games that the 360 has that are of interest to you, then I say get the 360. If you can find one, of course. That's part of the challenge there. As far as PlayStation 3, unless there are games that are PlayStation 3 only, that would be the only reason why I could think why I would even bother waiting to get one myself. Kind of sidetracking a little bit, I would be interested to see how these two consoles are going to do up against PC gaming. Because to be honest with you, I just don't have any real attraction to console gaming any longer. I just don't feel like it's meeting my needs. I feel like it's a little bit limiting.
What is Windows Vista for people that don't know?
Windows Vista is going to be the next version of Windows coming out quote unquote, 2007, from what I've been told. And basically, you're going to notice that it's unlike anything you've seen before. Much like Windows XP was to Windows Millennium Edition, that kind of a change graphically and the way everything looks and just the way everything performs, the features and all these other options and the way everything kind of results as you progress into the operating system, Vista is going to be an even bigger change. They're going to be implementing some new technologies, some of them great, some of them perhaps not so great. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do with it. Honestly, I think the biggest challenge that Vista is going to be facing, though, is getting people to decide that they want to move from Windows XP to Windows Vista. I just don't see a lot of call to action to make that happen. I don't see any real reason, a real benefit, real clear list of benefits of why the average Joe is going to want to do this. I personally think it's going to be of most interest to enthusiasts only. Personal opinion.
Is there going to be another manufacturer that can rival Apple's iPod?
If there was, I would say it would probably be Creative. I think Creative and their Nomad line and MP3 players of that sort would probably be the most likely. As a matter of fact, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it was Creative that put one out that actually put out a rival video player, if you will, that actually had better resolution, better battery life, and frankly better features than the current video iPod on the market right now. The future is going to be with video, and while audio is extremely important, it's important to also realize that they're going to have to work together and work side by side and not exclude one another. And up till now, there's been a lot of competition between the two, and I think that's unfortunate because the hardware market realizes that what's happening and is actually trying to embrace both. So I think that between the two different players, I think really it's going to come down to Creative, I think, will never have the market share that Apple does, but at the same time, I think that they have some pretty good potential of definitely gaining some just based on a better benefit. Unfortunately, Apple's got the marketing thing down better, though. So,
San Francisco may be a wireless internet city. So what will that mean for the rest of the country?
To be honest with you, I think it sets an example of what should be happening. Here in Washington State, we have a number of rural communities that simply do not have access to cable internet or to DSL internet, thus offering an alternative to that slow dial-up that most people in rural communities are stuck on. Wireless internet in San Francisco demonstrates that with proper funding and placement, you can have a wireless network across city limits that allow people to have access anywhere in town from a park bench or perhaps in a cafe or even in their own home. And it can be done economically if everybody's willing to share in the costs. But I think the challenge to the country is, can they step up to that and make it happen without help from people like Google or Earthlink?
What's the big local news story of the day in Bellingham?
Be honest with you, I don't follow local news that much here because it's small. It's a small enough of a town. There just isn't a lot going on. Probably the big thing usually here in town, it happens to be weather, the chance of snow or something equally mundane. Really not a lot happening here, so I couldn't tell you.
Sounds like Iowa.
It probably is. Yeah, it's big enough that there should be more going on. We're close enough to Seattle that we sometimes mooch off some of their news a little bit. But I guess the big controversy in here locally, not necessarily like recent news, but the big thing is the recent smoking ban that has been instituted statewide and the rebellion taking place amongst the people that really don't care and they're going to smoke anyway. I'm a non-smoker, so it's immaterial to me personally, but I know a lot of people that do smoke that are pretty much thumbing their nose at it. So I guess that would be the most exciting, interesting thing of the day.
Are people getting arrested because they're lighting up in public?
I have seen office cops smoking in the areas that they're not supposed to. I'm not going to name departments, but I have seen law enforcement here in this county that have done that. And what's interesting is that the rule states that you have to be so many feet away from designated entrances to restaurants and libraries and different public buildings and even private buildings. That's where the controversy really comes in. And I've seen law enforcement, you know, smoking very close to the doorways of public domain, specifically their offices. And so, no, I don't think there's going to be much problem with any types of arrests unless they're going to kind of contradict their own actions.
Kind of hard to arrest somebody when you've got cigarette smoke all over you.
Exactly. But in fairness, I will say that the majority of law enforcement in this county are not smoking people. They are non-smokers and they do not smoke. But there are a couple that do and obviously don't care. And I think most officers feel like that they have enough work, real work on their hands, and that this is a petty thing that they don't have time to fool with.
How did the story of Dick Cheney's hunting accident play around the water cooler?
Oh, boy. To be honest with you, it's interesting because I have both friends that are very Republican and I have friends that are both very Democrat, and they both found it amusing for different reasons. And it was interesting because I felt like the politics never really played a part into it, which was kind of cool. It was just kind of that, you know, head shake. You know, I can't believe that happened. That's crazy. Boy, I bet his face is red kind of thing. You know, it was interesting. And I'll bet that he felt pretty foolish for having an accident like that happen. I'll bet that was something he really wishes never happened. So it was interesting. A lot of kind of mimicking, playing the instance back and forth. But, you know, not a lot of politics involved in it.
Matt, here are the final five questions. Where is computer technology going in the next 5 years?
Where I see it going is I think that as broadband becomes more prevalent and more people have access to it, we're going to see more user-created media. I know that IT professionals buck this trend and dislike it because they feel like that it's taking something away from their little boys-only club. But the reality is that I think that user media, user-created media specifically, is going to be where most technology is headed, and I think both hardware appliances, software appliances, and web applications are going to encompass that almost exclusively. I think that's really what we're going to see happening.
And when you say user-creative media, you're saying podcasting and blogging?
I'd say podcasting, blogging, v-blogging, if you will, video blogging, and video podcasting specifically. I think that these things are going to continue to grow, and I think that video especially is going to really start to take off. And I can point to a couple instances to where the media is paying close attention to this, and even some mainstream television shows are being done on Google Video or iTunes, are being made available because people realize there is a market for this. Everybody wants their stuff now, and they want it when they can get it. But at the same time, there's a discovery challenge, and I'm hoping that some of the work that I'm doing can actually help to help benefit that a little bit.
What's the key to a really good puppet show?
Not being afraid to try new things. Not taking yourself too seriously. I think those are the two big ones.
And good puppets?
Having a good puppet is important, but if you have really good talent and are comfortable and fluent with what you're doing, then I think that you could do it with a sock and a marker, drawing eyes on just on the top of his head there. I think if you're comfortable with it and are just willing to just kind of go with the flow and really have some sort of basis of script of what you're going to do, you know, I don't think there's really anything to worry about. I think you can really come up with some creative stuff, but really watch what the trends are and come up with something that, you know, really know your market and really know who you're trying to target, I think is a big key too.
Well, what type of music have you listened to in the last couple of days?
I range generally from alternative rock to different types of independent punk music. Those are probably my two favorites, and both are tend to be a little bit misunderstood, but honestly, I'd say that those are probably my two big ones. No specific bands. I don't really like to pay attention to band names specifically. I like to listen randomly and just kind of take it in for what it is, not so much about who's playing it. So,
where does podcasting fit with the future of the internet?
Podcasting, audio and video specifically, you know, just even collectively, if you will, I think will play a big part in developing technologies that are coming out, allowing people to discover new ideas, expand their horizons, and come up with new ways of just, you know, making decisions, making purchasing buys, you know, looking at products that they might be interested in, figuring out how to deal with awkward social situations, and even just being entertained. I think that's really where we're going to see it become more and more part of our culture, but we still got a long way to go because there are a lot of people out there that have no idea what that word even means, and we've got our work cut out for us.
And the final question, what's something everyone should look for before they buy their next computer?
The number one thing is to understand what you're going to be wanting to do with it. And I think that's it. Most people think, oh, well, don't I want to like have certain specifications when I'm making this purchase? And That is true if you're a gamer or someone doing any type of video or audio editing. But for Joe Blow average, you're really going to be wanting to look more toward what specific mundane tasks you're going to be wanting it for. Are you going to be just wanting to check email and be able to surf the internet? If that's the case, then you could probably get away with a very low-end Brand X computer. If you're looking at, you know, doing something a little more industrial or exploring some new ideas or learning to use some programs like perhaps like Photoshop, for instance, you might want something that has a little more power to it. So I think really the key is to understand what tasks you're wanting to use it for and then to study up on what types of hardware are best to make that happen.
Matt, it's time to play Ask Bill 3. This is where I'm going to turn the microphone over to you, and you get to ask me three questions about anything. So fire away.
All right. I think the first question was, how did you get involved in radio, and what was your real interest in making that happen? I mean, was it something that you thought about as a child, or did you say, God, you know, one day I want to do radio? I mean, what was your real motivation for that?
When I was a kid, I got my first tape recorder, my first cassette recorder for my 12th birthday. And so that is something that really piqued my interest. So I used to do my own radio shows back when I was 12 years old. And as I look back on it now, it's like not only was that my first radio show, but that was probably one of my first podcasts, because what I did back then isn't too far from what I'm doing now, except now I'm not interviewing my pets, I'm interviewing live people. So that is something that really spiked my imagination. And just kind of going through, I guess, through high school and getting into FM radio, that seemed really, really cool. And in a way, getting into radio itself was just more of a love of music. And then once I got into the industry, I found out that that was about 10% of it.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I can actually relate to a lot of that, come to think of it. I think my next question is going to have to be about motorcycles. I just don't think there's any way to escape that. What are your feelings about motorcycles, safety, and things that can be done to make sure that people are properly educated before they're being planted onto a motorcycle and sent on their way? What types of challenges do you think that people need to be aware of before they get into motorcycling?
I think there has to be some sort of synergy between the buyer and the seller and the licensing. For example, I think there are a lot of accidents with people over 40 that are just getting their first motorcycle, and the only thing that they know about it is how to go straight and how to go fast. And they have no idea about how to slow it down properly. And so they probably use more of the rear brake than they should instead of using the front brake. And they just don't understand how a motorcycle turns. And so if there is something that would be of a safety value, that would be to say, before we can sell you this motorcycle, you have to at least prove that you have a license, number one. And number two, that you've gone through the Motorcycle Safety Foundation course. The other thing I think that should be done is that in every state, there should be a mandatory helmet law for all riders under the age of 21. Do you ride yourself, Matt?
Do I ride myself? No, I don't, actually. Probably a little bit of lack of motivation and time. It's something I've considered, but I have had family members that do and are very passionate about it. And so that was kind of an interest for me. I was just curious as to what your take on that was and what your thoughts were, because I know that there's, much like with gun safety or becoming a pilot or anything that involves a certain level of paying attention and skill, that there is a lot of question as to whether the item should be banned or there should be better training or a combination of training and regulation, that kind of situation. So,
okay, what's question number three?
Question number three, basically, now you're doing this podcast on a pretty regular basis. Is this something that you do to kind of keep things moving just in your free time? Is this part of your business? What does your podcast mean to you? Is this something that you do as a hobby, or is it more of a business type venture?
I started it off as a hobby, just as a let's take this personal journey and have lots of conversations with people around the world. And the surprising thing to me as I got started in this is how much time it actually takes and how much of a commitment that it really takes to do as well. And to the casual person that's thinking about, oh, I want to do podcasting, for example, this half-hour show that I do takes me about 9 hours a week to do. And so what I've done to make sure that I have a regular schedule is that I just make it part of the business day, just like I do my workouts because of the fact that I do a lot of public speaking. So I got to make sure that I've got a good physical appearance and I've got a good energy level. So I make sure that my workouts are a part of my business day. Podcasting is a part of my day. So I take out a couple hours, for example, today to set up the equipment and do the interview, and then I'll have a few more hours set aside tomorrow to do the production and do the web page, because I do all the web pages and the posting, all those things myself.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of work.
So from start to finish, it really is a discipline of just saying, okay, this is the time that I've set aside. And I also think that the consistency of always being there and always having a show every Monday morning is paying off, and it will continue to pay off dividends for the future. So I know that you've listened to the show many times in the past. What's your thoughts?
My thoughts really are that it's one of the most interesting ideas I've seen in a very long time. Most podcasts are people that will either, let's say audio podcast, for instance, they will come on and basically want to talk about themselves or their day or things that are of interest to them. But, you know, here's you doing a podcast that's actually interviewing just the average person to get an idea what their lives are like and what their interests are, and to explore that in a deeper sense. And I found that really interesting. I've never seen anything quite like that before.
Matt, do you want to tell a little bit about how people can find out more about your blog and also about your podcast?
Yeah, there's a few different places you guys can visit. The first one, of course, would be CoolCast Radio at CoolCastRadio.com. You can check out how we are basically taking some really new and exciting podcast content and streamed it for the folks that are just not really sure where to start when it comes to discovering new shows. That's one of the challenges with many directories out there, is it's hard to find, for instance, your show, which we stream. It's interesting. It allows people to say, oh, wow, I really like this, and then they can subscribe to your podcast. So they can find that at CoolCastRadio.com. People that are interested in really reading my work, I would recommend LockerGnome.com, mainly over my own personal blog because, frankly, there's more activity there. But I do post every once in a while on my own blog at MattHartley.com. That'll take you to the proper web address. It'll go ahead and forward you on. And that's really about all I've got going on at this point, in addition to some other work, which you can find out at MattHartley.com. There's links to my other projects as well there.
Matt, thank you so much for being a guest on You Are the Guest, and good luck with CoolCast Radio.
I appreciate that. Thank you for having me.
Music by Superlux coming up after the break.
If you'd like to be a guest on a future show, just go to our website at www.youaretheguest.com. Submit your first name, the town where you live, and a short description on why you'd make a good guest. There is no charge for being a guest, and you'll have the opportunity to share what you think and how the news and events from today affect your life. The show's producers will contact you by email if you're chosen for a future show.
Hi, this is John Bischke from LearnOutLoud.com, where people go to enrich their lives and become better at things that are really important to them. One of our titles that I'd like to recommend to you is Bill Grady's audio seminar titled How You Can Create Advertising That Really Works. It's a very common sense approach to answering all the questions that many small business owners have when it comes to doing advertising effectively and efficiently. And the best part about Bill's audio seminar is that it comes with a money-back guarantee. For more information on Bill Grady's How You Can Create Advertising That Really Works, go to learnoutloud.com/Bill Grady. Learnoutloud.com, changing the way the world learns.
If you'd like to drop me a comment about this week's show, just email me at BillGrady@YouAreTheGuest.com. That concludes this week's edition of You Are the Guest from the great city of Fort Dodge, Iowa. I'm Bill Grady. Thanks for listening. Music provided from the PodSafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.